Chapter 12 The Nachules. I came from my dreams of Thecla, directly to the morning. At one instant we walked mutely together, in what surely must have been the paradise the new sun is said to open to all who, in their final moments, call upon him. And though the wise teach that it is closed to those who are their own executioners, yet I cannot but think that he who forgives so much must sometimes forgive that as well. At the next I was aware of cold and unwelcome light, and the piping of birds. I sat up. My cloak was soaked with dew, and dew lay like sweat upon my face. Beside me, Jonas had just begun to stir. 10 paces off, 2 great destriers, one the color of white wine, one of unspotted black, champed their bits and stamped with impatience. Of feast and feasters, there was no more sign than of Thecla, whom I have never seen again, and now no longer hope to see in this existence. Terminus Est lay beside me in the grass, secure in her tough, well-oiled sheath. I picked her up and made my way downhill until I found a stream, where I did what I might to refresh myself. When I returned, Jonas was awake. I directed him to the water, and while he was gone, I made my farewell to dead Thecla. Yet, some part of her is with me still. At times I, who remember, am not Severian, but Thecla, as though my mind were a picture framed behind glass, and Thecla stands before that glass and is reflected in it. Two, ever since that night, when I think of her without thinking also of a particular time and place, the Thecla who rises in my imagination stands before a mirror in a shimmering gown of frost white that scarcely covers her breasts but falls in ever-changing cascades below her waist. I see her poised for a moment there. Both hands reach up to touch our face. Then she is whirled away in a room whose walls and ceiling and floor are all of mirrors. No doubt it is her own memory of her image in those mirrors that I see, but after a step or two, she vanishes into the dark, and I see her no more. By the time Jonas returned, I had mastered my grief and was able to make a show of examining our mounts. The black for you, he said, and the cream for me, obviously. Both of them look like they outvalue either of us, though, as the sailor told the surgeon who took off his legs. Where are we going?
To the House Absolute. I saw the incredulity in his face. Did you overhear me talking with Bodilus last night?
I caught the name, but not that we were to go there. I am no rider, as I've said before, but I got 1 foot into the black stirrup and swung myself up. The mount I had stolen from Bodilus 2 nights before had worn a lofty war saddle, fiendishly uncomfortable but very difficult to fall out of. This black carried a nearly flat affair of padded velvet that was both luxurious and treacherous. I had no sooner got my legs around him than he began to dance with eagerness. It was the worst possible time, perhaps, but it was also the only time. I asked, "How much do you remember?"
"About the woman last night?"
"Nothing." Jonas dodged the black, loosed the cream's reins, and vaulted up.
"I didn't eat. Vodalus was watching you. But after they had swallowed the drug, no one was watching me. And anyway, I have learned the art of appearing to eat without actually doing it."
I looked at him in astonishment.
"I've practiced several times with you. At breakfast yesterday, for example. I don't have much appetite, and I find it socially useful."
As he urged the cream down a forest path, he called over his shoulder,
"As it happens, I know the route fairly well, at least for most of the way. But would you mind telling me why we're going?
Dorcas and Jolenta will be there, I said, and I have to do an errand for our liege Vodalus. Because we were almost certainly watched, I thought it better not to say, but I had no intention of performing it. Here, lest this account of my career run forever, I must pass very quickly over the events of several days. As we rode, I told Jonas all that Vodalus had told me, and much more. We halted at villages and towns as we found them, and where we halted I practiced such of my craft as was in demand. Not because the money I earned was strictly necessary to us, for we had the purses the chatelaine Thea had given us, much of my fee from Saltus, and the money Jonas had obtained for the man-ape's gold, but in order to allay suspicion. Our fourth morning found us still pressing northward. Guile sunned itself to our right like a sluggish dragon, guarding the forbidden road that returned grass upon its bank. The day before, we had seen Uhlans on patrol, men mounted as we were, and bearing lances like those that had killed the travelers at the Piteous Gate. Jonas, who had been ill at ease since we had set out, muttered, "We must hurry, if we're to be near the House Absolute tonight. I wish Vodalus had given you the date that celebration begins, and some indication of how long it's to last." I asked, "Is the House Absolute still far off?" He pointed out an isle in the river. "I think I recall that, and when I was 2 days from it, some pilgrims told me the House Absolute was nearby. They warned me of the Praetorians, and seemed to know what they were talking about." Following his example, I had allowed my mount to break into a trot. "You were walking, riding my Merikip. I suppose I'll never see the poor creature again. She was slower at her best than these animals at their worst, I'll grant you. But I'm not certain they're twice as fast." I was about to say I did not believe Vodalus would have dispatched us when he did, if he had not thought it possible for us to reach the House Absolute in time, when something that at first seemed a great bat came skimming within a hand's breadth of my head. If I did not know what it was, Jonas did. He shouted words I could not understand and lashed my destrier with the ends of his reins. It bounded forward and nearly threw me, and in an instant, we were galloping madly. I remember shooting between two trees with not a span to spare on either side, and seeing the thing silhouetted against the sky like a fleck of soot. A moment later, it was rattling among the branches behind us. When we cleared the margin of the wood and entered the dry gully beyond, it was not to be seen. But as we reached the bottom and began to climb the farther side, it emerged from the trees, more ragged than ever. For the space of a prayer it seemed to have lost sight of us, soaring at an angle to our own path, then swooping toward us again in a long, flat glide. I had Terminus Est clear of her sheath, and I neck-reined the black between the flying thing and Jonas. Swift though our destriers were, it came far more swiftly. If I had possessed a pointed blade, I think I could have spitted it as it dove. Had I done so, I would surely have perished. As it was, I caught it with a two-handed stroke. It was like cutting air, and I thought the thing too light and tough for even that bitter edge. An instant later it parted like a rag. I felt a brief sensation of warmth, as though the door of an oven had been opened, then soundlessly shut. I would have dismounted to examine it, but Jonas shouted and waved. We had left the lofty forest about Saltus far behind, and were entering a broken country of steep hills and ragged cedars. A grove of these stood at the top of the slope. We plunged into their tangled growth like madmen, flattened against the necks of our mounts. Soon the foliage grew so thick they could move no faster than a walk. Almost at once we reached a sheer rock face and were forced to halt. When we were no longer smashing through the tangled limbs, I could hear something else behind us. a dry rustling, as though a wounded bird were fluttering among the treetops. The medicinal fragrance of the cedars oppressed my lungs.
"We must get out," Jonas panted, "or at least keep moving."
The splintered end of a branch had gouged his cheek. A trickle of blood coursed down it as he spoke. After looking in both directions, he chose the right, toward the river, and lashed his mount to force it into what appeared to be an impenetrable thicket. I let him break a trail for me, reflecting that if the dark thing caught us, I might be able to make some sort of defense against it. Soon I saw it, through the gray-green foliage. A few moments later there was another, much like the first, and only a short distance behind it. The wood ended, and we were able to flog our mounts to a gallop again. The fluttering scraps of night came after us. But though their smaller size made them appear swifter, they were slower than the single large entity had been.
"We have to find a fire!"
Jonah shouted above the drumming of the destrier's hooves.
"Or a big animal we can kill. If you slash the belly of one of these beasts, that would probably do it. But if it didn't, we couldn't get away."
I nodded to show that I also opposed killing one of the destriers, though it crossed my mind that my own might soon drop from exhaustion. Jonas was having to allow his to slow now to keep from distancing me. I asked, "Is it blood they want?" "No. Heat." Jonas swung his destrier to the right and slapped its flank with his steel hand. It must have been a good blow, for the animal leaped ahead as though stung. We jumped a dry water course, careened, sliding, and stumbling down a dusty hillside, then struck open rolling ground, where the destriers could show their best speed. Behind us fluttered the rags of black. They flew at twice the height of a tall tree, and seemed to be blown along by the wind, though the rippling of the grass showed that they faced it. Ahead, the lay of the ground changed as subtly and yet as abruptly as cloth alters at a seam. A sinuous ribbon of green lay as flat as if it had been rolled, and I swung the black down it, shouting in his ears and belaboring him with the flat of my blade. He was drenched with sweat now, and streaked with blood from the broken twigs of the cedars. Behind us, I could hear Jonas's shouted warnings, but I gave them no heed. We rounded a curve, and through a break in the trees, I saw the gleam of the river. Another curve, with the black beginning to flag again. Then, far off, the sight I had been waiting for. Perhaps I should not tell it. But I lifted my sword to heaven then, to the diminished sun with the worm in his heart. And I called, "His life for mine, new sun, by your anger and my hope!" The Ulan, and there was only one alone, must surely have thought me threatening him, as indeed I was. The blue radiance at the tip of his lance increased as he spurred toward us. Winded though he was, the black swerved for me like a hunted hare. A twitch of the reins, and he was sliding and turning, his hoofs scarring the green verdure of the road. In no more than a breath, we had reversed our track and were pounding back toward the things that pursued us. Whether Jonas understood my plan then, I do not know, but he fell in with it as though he did, never slackening his own pace. One of the fluttering creatures swooped, looking for all Earth like a hole torn in the universe, for it was true Phylogen, as lightless as my own habit. It was trying for Jonas, I believe, but it came within sword reach, and I parted it as I had before, and again felt a gust of warmth. Knowing from where that heat came, it seemed more evil to me than any vile odor could. The mere sensation on my skin made me ill. I reined sharply away from the river, fearing a bolt from the Ulan's lance at any moment. We had no more left the road when it came, searing the ground, and setting a dead tree ablaze. I pulled my mount's head up, making him rear and roar. For a moment, I looked for the three dark things around the burning tree. They were not there. I glanced toward Jonas then, fearing they had overtaken him after all, and were attacking him in some way I could not comprehend. They were not there either, but his eyes showed me where they had gone. They flitted about the Ulan, and he, as I watched, sought to defend himself with his lance. Bolt after bolt split the air, so that there was a continual crashing like thunder. With each bolt, the brightness of the sun was washed away, but the very energies with which he sought to destroy them seemed to give them strength. To my eyes, they no longer flew, but flickered as beams of darkness might, appearing first in one place, then in another, and always nearer the Ulan, until, in less time than I have taken to write of it, all three were at his face. He tumbled from his saddle, and the lance fell from his hand and went out.